All right, we're holding on Pei Amud Aleph. We may as well start back from the two dots again. Rabbi Eliezer and Eloi Tivahola, about three of the way down the Amud. The Mishnah said Rabbi Eliezer and Eloi Tivahola, that Rabbi Akiva had said that a Suf Chama can't do Chalitza because he never had Chafa Kosher. There was never a time when he was fertile. And a Swiss Adam can, whereas Rabbi Eliezer says the other way around. The point is, though, we see that Rabbi Eliezer is holding that on the contrary, Rabbi Eliezer holds that a Swiss Chama, a natural born Swiss, can do Chalitza. What do you mean? We have a contradiction. Mishnah says in Nida, Ben Esri Mishan of Lahavi Shtei Cyrus, a man is 20 years old and has not yet had two pubic hairs. You be Uriah Shul Ben Esri, and then you have to bring proof that he's 20, bring his birth certificate or whatever. Well, who has Swiss? And then he's defined as a Swiss. Loichol, it's Loi Miyam. He can't do Yibum or Chalitza. Yibum or Chalitza or Yibum. Similarly, Bas Esri Lahavi Shtei Cyrus, a girl 20 years old who has not yet had Shtei Cyrus, you be Uriah Shi Bas Esri, and then you bring proof that she's 20, Vihi Hilonis, and that's the definition of an Hilonis. Lechalatis Wadi Sebemis, she doesn't do Chalitza or Yibum either. Gibre Vesilo, the cutoff point is 20, Vesilo says. Or Veshamai and Zebezeb and Ishmona Esri, Veshamai says the cutoff point in both cases is 18. And Rabbi Yezer, I'm Hazacha Kediva Vesilo, and Kediva Kediva Veshamai, and Rabbi Yezer says, sort of a compromise. A male. You go according to Vesilo, that the cutoff is 20. A woman is like Vishama, 18. Because a woman normally develops signs of physical maturity earlier than a man. So it's logical that by 18, if she hasn't yet, then it means she's an Hilonis. The point is, the Mishnah is saying as a blanket statement that according to Vesilo, 20, according to Vishama, 18, and according to Eliezer, a compromise, whatever, that yet in our Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that a Swiss Adam can do Chalitza or Yibum. So what is it? The answer is Amar Rami Bar Dikuli Amar Shmuel. You're right. Chazer by Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer changed his mind.
And then we're talking about one case, a boy and a girl.
No, because the Mishnah that we just quoted from Nida mentions both a boy and a girl. It says a Swiss and it says an Eilonis. Our Mishnah is talking about a Swiss. So the point is, we're saying that Rabbi Eliezer changed his mind. Now, what did he change his mind? What did he change his mind on? Is it that he came to decide, not like our Mishnah says, that we're saying in our Mishnah that a Swiss Chama cannot do Chalitza or Yibum, can do Chalitza or Yibum, rather. Maybe he changed his mind to say that they can't, and that represents the Mishnah in Nida. Or is it the other way around? First he held that they can, like they can't, like the Mishnah in Nida says, and later on he changed his mind to say like our Mishnah. Which Mishnah is earlier and which is later, basically? Tashma, come, let's bring a proof. The Tanya Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Swiss Chama Cholitz V'Cholitzin L'Ishtoi, that a Swiss Chama can do Chalitza, and you can do Chalitza for his wife, which is similar to what our Mishnah says, should came B'minon Mitzrayim, Alexandria Shemitzrayim, because people like that are able to be cured in Alexandria Shemitzrayim, in Alexandria, which in those days had all the world's great scientists and whatnot. So they knew how to treat such a person.
Things have changed.
Okay, but in those times, Alexandria was like the MIT or something of the ancient world, you know. So what's the point? It's more logical to say, therefore, that he changed his mind from the Mishnah in Nida. Originally, he had held that a Swiss Chama cannot do Chalitza. Later on, he realized, you know what? But after all, they are curable, and therefore, he held, like it says in our Mishnah, that they can do Chalitza or Yibum.
Because why?
Because once we say they're curable, means that it's not that you can't say on them you can't apply to the Swiss the idea that that v'loyimacha shmoy miyisrael, that his name shouldn't be erased. We'd say v'huva prat lemachui, as opposed to somebody whose name is necessarily erased because he'll never recover. In this case, there is a way to make him recover. There is a way to make him fertile. Give him hormone therapy or whatever it is. So therefore, therefore, it's more logical to say that the Mishnah in Nida is his original opinion, and the Mishnah and our Mishnah over here is his later opinion. Incidentally, by the way, when we say that Bishamai, that Bishilo, because we said that Bishilo holds 20 for both boys and girls, that Amam actually has an interesting shita in that. It doesn't mean 24 years. That Amam says once they've reached 30 days into the 20th year, meaning 19 and plus 1 month,
that's
what it means. Already at that point, if they have the simonim of a Swiss or an Ilonis, as the case may be, which we'll talk about on the next Amud, then already you can consider them that. Rabbi Lazar, this is the Amorah Rabbi Lazar, says, no, you don't necessarily have to say Rabbi Lazar changed his mind. The contradiction between the two Mishnahs. when he's talking over there in Nida, that 18 or 20 respectively, he's not talking about chalitza or yibum. Yes, the Mishnah begins by mentioning lecholut v'lemi yabim or lecholatus v'lemi sebemis. Rabbi Yehuda, though, according to this way of looking at it, is not really addressing himself to that. He is saying that, let's put it this way, until a boy or a girl, as the case may be, has Shei Cyrus, they're still considered a kohen. We usually talk about, you know, a boy becomes a gadol when he's 13 and a girl when she's 12. Really, it's not really 13 and 12, it's any time after 13 or 12, respectively, when they develop Shei Cyrus. You could have, for example, a boy who's late developing in puberty and doesn't develop Shei Cyrus until he's 14 or 15. He's not considered a bar enshin until then. He's not considered capable of being punished by Beis Din.
So it's when he's a bar enshin that actually we start counting.
So what do we do then? Suppose now you have this guy who's 20 or 19 in a month, according to the Rambam, whatever, and he hasn't developed Shei Cyrus. What Rabbi Eliezer is not saying that we're dealing with whether he can do Chalitza or Yibum or not. According to Rabbi Eliezer in our Mishnah, he could do Chalitza or Yibum. He's not disagreeing with that in the Mishnah Nidah. He's saying until he reaches 20, or until a girl reaches 18, they're not bar unchin. They're not capable of being punished by Beis Din for anything they do wrong.
And therefore?
That's the difference. So the difference is that Mishnah is talking about unchin, our Mishnah is talking about Chalitza and Yibum. And it means the other way around also. It means, for example, once the girl is 18 or once the boy is 20, even though they have no Shtei Cyrus, Rabbi Eliezer would say, nevertheless, they're a gadol because that's the cutoff point. And that's it. From then on, they're chayiv and unshin. But nothing to do with chalitza or yibum, because we see from our Mishnah that Rabbi Eliezer holds that a Swiss is able to do chalitza or yibum.
In other words, when you're bar unshin, that we count differently.
No, so in other words, Rabbi Eliezer is saying over there, 18 or 20 refers to bar unshin. There's never a cutoff point when he is or isn't able to do chalitza or yibum, or there is actually, I guess, because below 18 or below 20 he's a katan, and he can't do chalitza and even yibum. We said is only effective dirabanan. But what we're saying is after 18 or 20 he is a bar unchin, but he's also able to do chalitza or yibum. So now they had a discussion on that point. What happens? A person eats chaylev or does any other thing. Chaylev is a kind of Gemara's paradigm for something which a person would be chayv chatas for. There's about 40 different averes that a person could be chayv chatas for. So a person ate chaylev any time from the age of 12 until the age of 18, which, Tosfos points out, what we're really talking about over here necessarily is a girl, according to Rabbi Eliezer. 12 is the normal age of majority for a girl. 18 is the cutoff point, according to Rabbi Eliezer, where at that point, if she doesn't have Shtei Cyrus, then she's an Eilonis. So this girl ate chaylev sometime during those 6 years, but know the boy Simone Swiss, and then they develop the simonim of a Swiss, or not really a Swiss, but an Eilonis, whatever. They develop signs showing that they're never going to physically mature, and therefore that you would consider them a gadol. And then, after all, said and done, they did in fact end up producing Shtei Cyrus later on. So you thought they were, so during those 6 years, nothing happened during those 6 years, so fine, they're still a cousin. Then they developed Simone Swiss, which maybe should mean retroactively, all the way going back to 12, then they should be considered a gadol, because that's the normal age of majority. All of a sudden, now they develop Shtei Cyrus, so you see, they didn't actually become a gadol until they're 19 or 20 or what have you. So what happens? Rav Amanas is Swiss for Masreya, so Rav says you consider the person to be a Swiss, or an Eilonis retroactively. So yes, what we say is we ignore the Shtei Cyrus. Once he develops Simone Strius, or a woman develops Simone Eilonis, that's it. At that point we consider them a gadol retroactive to Bar Bas Mitzvah age. The fact that now they develop Shtei Cyrus doesn't matter. That doesn't make it that retroactively they were cutting all this time. Or Shmuel, I'm a katnoya by Tisha, where Shmuel says no. You the fact is that only from 18. Only from 18, when he has a chazaka of being a Swiss, do you consider him a gadol? That from 12 to 18 or 13 to 20, as the case may be, you don't. Yes, eventually he developed Simone Swiss, and therefore we see all along that at 12 or 13 they were already a Swiss or an Eilonis. We just didn't know it yet. Doesn't matter until the actual Simone Swiss or Simone Eilonis develop, which we'll talk about on other days what they are. Then they're still considered a katan. So no chiyuv for the chaylev. Mask for Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef asks on this. Rav, according to Rav, who's saying that all this time we consider the person to be a to be a to be a gadol. So again, you have the case of a woman who at 12 had no shtei sadus, no pubic hair yet. So you wait till she's 18 or 20, according to Beis Hillel, and you see then she develops simonei ailonis, and you're saying then retroactively to 12 she's considered a gadola. Well, then in that case, ailonis yehelach nas. An ailonis, a girl who's an ailonis, according to the mayor, if somebody rapes her, then he should have to pay the knas that the Torah says, or if he seduces her. The Torah describes in Parshas Mishpatim the seduction is pitui. In Parshas Kisei it describes oinas, which is rape. In either case, a man seduces or rapes a naira psula, a naira meaning a woman within 6 months of becoming of developing two pubic hairs. Then in the case of pitui, we discussed before. In the case of pitui, he has the choice of marrying her or paying the knas. And in the case of onus, he pays the knas and he has to marry her, and he's never allowed to divorce her. In either case, she or her father has the right to refuse also. But we're talking about if they consent to it, then in the case of mafate, he has the choice. And in the case of onus, there's no choice; he has to. Now, the Mishnah in Subas describes that according to the mayor and Ilonis, or not a Mishnah, a Braise, and Ksobas describes that according to the mayor and Ilonis, there's no Knas and there's no Pitui. These rules don't apply to an Ilonis. Now the question is, why not? Shouldn't we say that retroactively it turns out she was a Naira during the 6 months after 12 because she was never going to develop pubic hair anyway? So if somebody did Onus or Pitui during those 6 months, they should have to pay. Yes, it's going to be years later because it's only years later we find out she's an Ilonis. But okay. You should have to pay, according to Rav, that all this time she was considered a gadola. The answer is Amalei Abaye, Miketznusa Yatzel Beggar. The difference, Yatzel Beggar. The difference is, in the case of an Ilonis, you don't say that she goes through a stage of Naira. An Ilonis only goes through the stage of Katana and then directly to Bergeris. A Bergeris, who's more than 6 months after Shtei Cyrus, there's no Knas and there's no Pitui. Those rules only apply, the Torah says, to Naira, to a girl within those 6 months. The Ilonis, yes, obviously the 6 months exist, but because she does not have the Shtei Cyrus and she doesn't go through that normal development that a normal woman does, therefore she never has the stage called Naira. She goes directly from being a Katana to being a Begeris. So yes, according to Rav, all the way back from 12, she was a Begeris. As soon as we find out many years later that she's an Ilonis, retroactively to 12, she was a Gzaila. But there was never any Nairus. And Knas and Onus and Pitui can only apply to a Naira. They're nothing to do with whether we consider it retroactive.
A Naira has Simanim?
A Naira has Shtei Cyrus, but she's still within the 6 months after that, so her body is still developing.
Shtei Cyrus between the 6 months, during the 6 months.
So no. She develops the Shtei Cyrus. That starts the clock. That starts the 6 month clock. 6 months after the Shtei Cyrus, she's considered a Begeris. It's during that 6 month window that the concept of onus and mefata applies. Yeah. Amalei. So Rabbi Yosef was very pleased with that answer. He said, you know, kol kihani milyam ma'isa yisamu mishamoi. Halavai, that all such good teachings should be said in my name. In other words, that makes a lot of sense. And we see that. The Tanya, we can see that it's supported by Braisa, because Braisa says, Eina sris nidim keben sora remora, that a sris cannot be judged as a ben sora remora. We know the Torah talks about in Parshas Kisei that a boy who is disobedient, and the Gemara explains the details, he steals from his father and eats meat and drinks wine and whatever, then you give him malchus, and eventually, if he keeps up at it, then you give him skila. A sris cannot be judged as a ben sora remora. Lefisha ein ben sora remora nidon elabach simas zakan atachton. Because a ben sora remora can only be judged only when he starts developing the zakan atachton, the lower beard, which is a nice euphemism. No, the lower beard, not the beard on the face. It's a nice euphemistic way of saying pubic hair. And a Swiss doesn't develop that. Similarly, the ein ailonis nidonet b'naira hamayrosa. Similarly, an ailonis cannot be judged as a naira hamayrosa, the various cases of onus and pitui, and also the case of their moti shemra, as the Torah described. A man marries a woman and then claims that she was mezana before they ever finished the nisuin. She can't be judged of that. She can't know. So Yatzel a beggar, because from being a Tana, she goes directly to being a beggar. So we see the Braise is saying that an Ilonis does not pass through the stage of Naira. So therefore, yes, applying that to our case, same idea. So that answers the question. Even according to Rav, you could say, yes, she considered a Gola retroactively to 12, but there was never a stage of Naira, so therefore no Knas, therefore no Onus and no Pitui. Yeah. Amar Rav Abba, Simonis Swiss Vailonis, or Benchmeiner, the simonim of a Swiss and Vailonis, which we're going to talk about soon, and the simonim of an 8-month baby, where a baby was born within the 8th month, where we've discussed a number of times already that in the Gemara's time such a baby was considered to be non-viable. Ein Osin, Ben Maisa, Achi Yuben Esrim. You can't actually do anything to consider that, to consider that he will live until they're 20 years old. Meaning in the case of a Swiss and Ilonis, means what we said before, that that we have to wait until 20, if only if they don't, only if they develop, so we wait until they're 20 years old to see if they develop either Shtei Cyrus or the signs of a Swiss and Ilonis.
And Osin Maisa means?
Osin Maisa means we don't consider them, we consider them to be sort of a limbo. We say a boy, for example, is 19 years old, up to 19 and 30 days, according to the Rambam, and has not developed either Simone Swiss or the regular Simonim, we still consider him a cotton. We can't consider him one or the other. We don't know what's going to happen until he's 20 years old, 19 and 30, whatever. And similarly, Ben Shmona, we're saying that an 8-month baby is considered to be not viable. You can't consider him to be, the Gemara is assuming at this point that what it means is you can't consider him fully viable even if he had well-developed hair and nails, the DNA that we talked about before, and we're going to talk about soon, that if a baby is born in the 8th month and he has fully developed hair and nails, we do normally consider him to be a viable baby. We say that he's a 7-month baby who was delayed, who ended up being born late. And we said before that babies developed on 2 tracks. There was a 9-month track and a 7-month track. So he's on the 7-month track. He just was born late.
Right.
But Rabbi Bo is saying that you cannot consider him to be fully viable until he's 20 years old.
And what's the deviation of halacha?
So it would mean, in other words, for example, as I was going to say in a second, that it means, for example, you might have to consider a mukta. But wait, we'll get to it in a second. The question is, Ben Shemona Mikochaya, does an 8-month baby even live to be 20 years old anyway? Well, Hatanya, Ben Shemona Hareu Ke'evan, but a Braita says, we learned it in Shabbos, that a baby born in the 8th month is considered like a stone, but also the Talpula, you're not allowed to move him on Shabbos because he's mukta. He's not going to live anyway. Abel ima sheicha olav umaniktoi, but his mother can bend over him. She can't lift him up because he's mukta, but she can bend over and nose him. Mipnei hasakana, because of the danger.
It's still a fun, it's still a
lot. No, this particular halacha does not apply nowadays, because nowadays this chazaka that babies born in the 8th month are not going to be viable does not exist anymore. The mishanu ativim, human nature has changed.
The halacha has changed also.
Yeah. So she can bend over and nose him with nasa kana because of the danger. First of all, he has to eat. And second of all, she has to relieve herself of her milk. So the point is, he evidently he's not going to live to be 20. What are you talking about, Achi Ben Esrim Shana? The answer is, Hacha Maskin Kishagamu Simono. You're right. Rebbe Bo's case is talking about where he had fully developed, again, like we said before, he had fully developed hair and nails. The Tanya, as we learn in the Paraisa, Ezeo Ben Shmona, what's considered an 8-month baby, culturally Kololoi Chadosha, when the full 9 months have not elapsed. Rebbe Omer, Simona Mechichon Olav. Rebbe says, no, you don't just look at the number of at the length of the pregnancy, you look at the Simonim. That'll tell you whether he's viable. Side of its opponent, Shalom Gomeru, you look if his hair
is viable.
So if a baby is born in the 8th month, and he has sight of its opponent, Shalagamru, and he has incomplete hair and nails, then it shows he was supposed to be on the 9-month track. He's premature. In those days, premature babies didn't survive. So that's that. So Rebbe is saying, therefore, that on the contrary, if he has fully developed hair and nails, then we can assume that it's likely on that basis he's going to live. Nevertheless, we can't say for sure until he's 20 years old, Rebbe Bahu is saying. The question is, time of Shalagamru. It's a statement. Timer de la gomru. The reason why we're saying that, why Rebbe would say that he's not viable is because his hair and nails are incomplete, so it shows he still has more development to do. Ha gomru, but if he has fully developed hair and nails, aminan, then we say, hi, bar zayin, who really, this is a 7-month baby, he was on the 7-month track. He got delayed, he was born late.
That's what we do in medicine.
That what?
There's a
chronological clock and a biological clock. Okay. Go by the biological clock. Okay. Seems to indicate it's virus. Yeah. Okay. Now the question is, you're telling me that a baby can be delayed. What about the case where Rava, it says on the side, once decided a case, the Isha Shalach by
what?
Tesfah literally means the additional one. There's a couple of different explanations. One is that he was an expert in the Tesefta, and therefore he was nicknamed Tesfah. He was actually one of the very last Amoraim. He was in the generation after Rav Ashi, after Rav Inover Rav Ashi. It was the Talmud. But he was one of the very last Amoraim before the Gemara was completed. So he's like, so to speak, sort of the extra Rava or Rabba. Like besides the famous Rava and Rabba from 100 or 200 years before, he's like the extra one. Anyway, so he once decided a case, a woman whose husband had gone overseas, the baby was born 12 months after the husband went away. Tresi Yachishata means 12 months of the year. 12 full months had passed and the baby was born. And Rava Tetzvah held this baby as kosher. He's not a mamzer. We don't say she was mizana a few months after her husband left. No, we say that a pregnancy can last up to 12 months. In Rav Ransburg on the side here, it says an interesting idea from Ravan, one of the Balei Tosfos, is that if the first creature that the woman meets up with after she becomes pregnant is a male horse, a stallion, then that kind of thing is likely to happen, that the pregnancy will take 12 months. Where we get to that from, I don't know. It was an interesting idea that's brought in Chassidus in a number of places, that Elio, I don't know if he was born after such a pregnancy, that a normal baby is born after 9 months. Moshe Rabbeinu and Shmuel and a number of other tzaddikim in Jewish history were born after 6 months, because they were from Alma de Tchura, from the world of males, and therefore they were born quicker. Elio Hanavi was from Alma de Nukva, from the world of females, and therefore he was, well, he himself was a male, but still, and therefore he was born after an extended pregnancy of 12 months.
It's maybe
from the Zoya or from Kisvei Arizal or something, I don't remember. Anyway, the point is, that Robert Tesfah said this baby is kosher. We don't assume he's a mamzer, because a pregnancy could last up to 12 months. The question is, command to Rebbe, to Amar Mishtah, is that only according to Rebbe who holds that a pregnancy can be delayed? Usually we don't pass him like Rebbe in opposition to the Chachamim. The Chachamim seem to be saying as a blanket statement that any baby born in the 8th month is necessarily non-viable, and Rabbo is saying that fine, if he lives to 20, then fine, retroactively we know all along he was. But normally a pregnancy is not delayed. Only Rebbe says that it is. That it could be a 7-month baby was delayed to the 8th month. Rava Tesfah is saying that you can assume the baby is born after 12 months. That would only be according to Rebbe. The halacha should be like the Rabbanah. According to the Rabbanah, we should say this kid the manda. The answer is kibbutz de'ikar of Shimon ben Gamliel. The Amar Mishtai, since we also have the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, who also says that a baby can be delayed, as we're going to quote in a second. So then Rava Tesfah already has, it's not just one opinion of Rebbe, he has two opinions. He already has a Rabbim to rely on. Where do we see? At the time, we learned a price.
So that counts more than the Chachamim, in other words?
Not more than the Chachamim, but at least it's a basis. He's able to use it as a basis for halacha. The Tanya, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Kol Shasha, Lamed Yom Ba'adam, and a Nefil. Rav Shimon Gamliel says a general rule, any baby that survives for 30 days is not a Nefil. You don't have to wait till he's 20, like Rav Abba was saying. You only have to wait till he's 30 days. In other words, Rav Shimon Gamliel is effectively saying the same thing. Yes, the 8-month rule holds true, but if the baby survived for 30 days, then you know retroactively that he was on the 7-month track and was delayed. So now you have Rebbe who says that, and you have Rav Shimon Gamliel who says that. So on that basis, Robert Tisval was able to say by the same token, a 9-month baby could end up being born after 12 months. So another one. A Zos Swisschama, what is the definition of a Swisschama? Koshul Ben Esther, will have a Shtesiris if he's 20 and doesn't have Shtesiris. Even if later on he develops Shtesiris, then he's still considered like a Swiss for all purposes. Actually, the Rambam explains, based on a Gemara and Nida, that there's a little more to it than that. What it really is like this. There's three possibilities with both a man and a woman. You can have that by the age, you can have, in most cases, by the age of 12 for a girl or 13 for a boy, or approximately then, they start developing Shtesiris and the rest of the signs of physical maturity, and then that's it. They become a gadol, in the case of a woman, a naira, and then a begeret. You can have a case where by age 20, 19 and 30 days, whatever, they develop the simonim of a Swiss or an Ilonis, which we're going to discuss now, and that's it, we consider them a Swiss or an Ilonis. You can have a third case. The third case that Amram describes is you can have where the person never developed the simonim of a Swiss, but also never developed Shtesiris. In that case, they're in limbo until they're 35. Only when they're 35, which is the majority of a person's lifetime, because the average person lives to 70, only then can you consider that they're a Swiss.
Yeah, that's not a lot of today.
According to the Rambam, it is, and I believe Shulchan Aruch fastens that way. And as a practical matter, nowadays, if a person had this kind of problem, they'd probably treat them with hormones or whatnot to get their development going. But The Elohim Simonov, and following are the Simonim of a Swiss, Kol Sha'in Lezaka, and he doesn't have a beard, or Sa'arei Lakri, and his hair is soft. Lakri literally means damaged, it actually says Rach, which means soft, like a baby's hair. Or Sa'arei Machlik, and his skin is smooth. Usually a man's skin would be hairy. In this case, he has no body hair. Reb Shimon Gamlielim, Meshim Reb Yehuda Ben Yair, Kol Sha'in Meimov Malin Resichos. Another thing another definition of a Swiss is if his urine does not produce foam. Normally, if a healthy man's urine foams up, it doesn't.
It should be foam.
What?
Should not foam.
Okay, but many times not foam, but whatever. Many times it does. It bubbles, whatever. Yeah. V'yeshra, I mean, another definition, kolamatamayim v'ein oisa kippa. We had this on Amar Aleph yesterday, that he urinates and it doesn't make an arc, it doesn't, it sort of dribbles out. V'yeshra, I mean, others say a different definition, kol shishichvas zare doicha, that his shichvas zare, his semen is doicha, it's not normal shichvas zare, it's sort of, you know, it has the consistency of egg white, kind of, it's got a certain substance to it. Here it's kind of, Shane Kosher actually says it's not bound together, it doesn't have a substance in it. It's solo kamayim, it's clear like water. V'yashayim, others say a different definition. Kol Shane Meimim Ragla Machmitzin. His urine, if it's left out, doesn't stink. After a while, you leave urine. After in a keli, after a while, it starts stinking. His doesn't. Literally means it becomes ferments. It ferments. It acidifies. Whatever. Yeah. The definition is he bathes during the winter when it's cold out because the water on his skin is warm. But his skin does not produce vapor because his skin is cold, basically. So there's not that much of a temperature difference between it. That's all these things amount to some kind of hormonal thing. Another definition is that his voice is weak, is high pitched. You can't tell the difference in his voice whether it's a man or a woman. So those are the definitions of Swiss. And actually, the Rambam described that we'll get to the Gemara soon. Do we need? So we had many different definitions over here. Do you need all of them for him to be considered a Swiss, or is one of them enough? So we'll get to that. The Ezehi Alonis, what's the definition of an Alonis? Koshi Bas Esther Levi Abe Cyrus. She's 20 inches of Shte Cyrus. Again, even if she gets 2 hairs later, she's still considered an Alonis for all purposes. The Elohim Simoner, and the following are the Simonim of an Alonis. Koshi Ein Ladadim, she has no breasts. Or Miskasha Bishas Tashmish, and she feels pain, like she a tightness when having relations. Reb Shimon Gamlielim, Kol Sha'in La Shipuli Me'ayim Kanashim. Another definition is that she does not have the bottom of her, the lower part of her stomach is not shaped like a woman. Normally, women have above their genitals, above their pubic area, they have a sort of raised soft area. It's in English, it's called the mons veneris. She doesn't have that. Reb Shimon Elazarim, a Kol Sha'in La Ova. Another definition is she has a heavy voice, but in a keres, but initially she can't tell whether it's a man's or a woman's voice. Now, Itmar, so they said a discussion like this. Simone Swiss, Reb Huna Amadri Ukulam. Reb Huna says that you can only consider him a Swiss or an Ilonis if all of them exist, not just some of them.
Yeah.
And Reb Yechanan says, no, even if he has one of them, that's enough to determine it. Gemara points out, if it's a boy and he started producing 2 hairs in his beard, or actually, I guess a girl takes out the word in his beard, whatever, and then everybody would agree that you need the rest of the simonim in order for him to be considered a student. You could say that maybe he had just enough hormones to start developing a little bit of beard hair, but everything else. But nevertheless, in order to say that he's a Swiss, you'd have to have all these other things. He has soft skin and a high-pitched voice and the things with his urine, etc. If he does not even have any hairs in his beard, then Rabbi Yochanan would be saying that one of these simonim is good enough. Even before he has all the other ones, the fact that he is one of them and he has no hair in his beard is enough. We can consider him a Swiss on that basis. Question is, what about the case where you find that Rabbi Baravur says to the other Chachamim of his time, Einu Beber Rav Nachman, take a look carefully at Rav Nachman when he goes to the bathhouse. And if you see that his skin, if you see that steam comes off his skin after he bathes, Esav Le Bras, then I will give him my daughter in marriage. In other words, he's saying, basically, Reb Nachman is a great Talmud Chacham. I would be proud to have him as a son-in-law, but not if he's going to be a Swiss.
One second.
The point is, he wants to be short. So therefore, he tells the Chachamim an easy way to tell. You're not going to watch him when he's when you're not going to watch him when he's urinating. You're not going to check his shichlas nera, etc. An easy way to tell is when he goes to the mikveh, when he goes to the bathhouse. Yeah. So Kaman Kirapuna, is that only according to Rapuna? Is that only according to Rapuna? Why? Because we're saying that once he does not have once one of the simonim of Swiss is lacking, then already it's good enough. Otherwise, he should have told them, you have to check out all eight things. You have to check that his voice is normal, and you have to check that his urine does make a stream, and so on and so forth. Answer is like, Rav Nachman, siki dikna havalei. No, because Rav Nachman actually had bits of hair in his beard. In other words, his beard was just starting to grow in. We don't know. But whatever it was, his beard was just starting to grow in. So therefore Rav Baravua had no concern. So therefore Rav Baravua figures, we just said, according to both Rav Huna and Rav Yechanan, once the person starts developing a beard, then yes, you need all the other simonim in order for him to be considered a Swiss. Once you find that he has one, that one simon is lacking, once you find that steam comes off his body when he bathes, good, then you know he's not a Swiss. Those two things taken together, the beard hair and the steam coming off his body, is good enough.
Can exclude the fact that he's a Swiss?
No, what we're saying is like this. If he doesn't have a beard, maybe not. His skin might be warm enough that steam will come off, but nevertheless he's a Swiss because he has all the other simonim. But what we're saying is, the fact that Rav Baravua is telling the Rabbanan, all you need to check is that one thing, is because he already had a little bit of hair in his beard.
So he needs these two things.
So once he has those two things, then we know we're good.
And the Chachamim, it's not the Rabbanan,
it's Rav Huna versus Rav Yechanan. Uh-huh. Rav Yechanan would say that in all cases, if a person has four or five of these simonim, he's not a Swiss. Only if he has all eight of them. Right. Yeah. As according to Rav Huna, once he has one of them, then you can consider him. Oh no, the other way around. Rav Huna is the one who's saying you need all of them, and Rav Yechanan is saying one is enough.
What's the Shulchan Aruch saying?
The halacha is kind of a suffix. Once he has one of them, then he's a potential Swiss. Mm-hmm. But you don't know for sure unless he has all of them.
So really, you need all of them.
In effect, what you do is you consider him sort of half cotton, half gadol until all of them. Yeah. Now, then the Mishnah continued, a Swiss lecholitz le miyabim chen ailonis, that a Swiss cannot do chalitzu or yibum, and an ailonis also can't do chalitzu or yibum. So, katoni, Swiss doing your ailonis, which means that we're comparing the case of Swiss to the case of ailonis. We're juxtaposing, I mean that they're similar. Ma ailonis bidei shemayim, just like an ailonis by definition is bidei shemayim, there's no way of making a woman into an ailonis. Av Swiss bidei shemayim, the same thing, the Swiss has to mean a Swiss chama, a natural born Swiss. Therefore, that Stam Mishnah is according to Rabbi Akiva. Da'ama bidei Adam ein b'shemayim loy. He said earlier in the Mishnah that a Swiss Adam is able to do chalitzu yibum. A Swiss chama is not. So the last part of the Mishnah goes according to him. Yeah. Then we said a Swiss shicholitz levam levim tel pasul v'cholo. That a Swiss does chalitzu for his yivama. He does not pasul her with just the chalitza, but if he has relations with her, then he pasuls her because then it's a bialasinus. He pasuls her to korona. So what's the implication of the Mishnah? Only because he had relations with her, and he is also to her because he's not capable of doing chalitz or yibum. Which implies if somebody else had relations with her, if he was a yivam l'shuk, she illegally went and had relations with somebody else before doing yibum with one of the other brothers. Apparently she's not possible to kona. Problem with that is, should we say then that that's a contradiction to what Rav Hamnuna said? Dama we had earlier in the Masechta.
Rav Nuna was the only one who said that
if she goes to the shuk. No. Wait. Da'amar, that he says, Shemeres Yavam Chazin Sapsul, that a Shemeres Yavam who is Mizana is also to her Yavama.
Right.
The Mishnah seems to be implying only because she had relations with the Swiss is she possible to the other Yavamim. Right. But if she had relations with somebody else off the street, she'd still be Mutter to them. According to Rav Nuna, she should be Mutter. The answer is loy. That's not what the Mishnah means. No, the same thing would apply even if she had relations with somebody else, according that she'd be possible kona. But I did tana reisha b'didei, since the first part of the Mishnah is talking about him doing chalitza, where obviously somebody else doing chalitza is not relevant. Tana nami sefer b'didei, so the sefer, which is talking about Yibum, also mentions him, even though according to Rav Amnuna, the same thing would apply to anybody else. Anybody except for one of the brothers who's legally allowed to do Yibum with her. Again, then the Mishnah continues, "V'chein Ilonis v'chol tzlach." In the same way, an Ilonis, who one of the brothers did chalitza to her, doesn't pass on her, but if they had relations with her, they pass on her. So again, taimer de ba'olua. The implication is only because they had relations that she would become pasul. Haloi ba'olua loi, which implies if they didn't, then she wouldn't be pasul. Command de'loi k'rabi hoda. Evidently, then our Mishnah is not a k'rabi hoda. De'i rabi hoda ha'am ilonis zoni. We had earlier, we had a few weeks ago, that rabi hoda had said that an ilonis anyway is considered a zoni. She's anyway pasul a kohona. If we're saying psula, meaning that she's pasul to kohona, only because the brothers had relations with her, then that can't be according to rabi hoda, because according to rabi hoda. It is a Mishnah more on the subject of Swiss. Swiss chama koyin shenasa bas Yisrael, or a koyin who's a Swiss chama, a natural born Swiss, shenasa bas Yisrael, he marries bas Yisrael. Machil b'tumah, he's able to have her. No, lachatchila, he's allowed to marry her. Okay, I mean b'diavad, I mean okay, she's chama. We said it's fine. He's not a p'tur daka. Not a p'tur daka. P'tur daka, we said, only applies if it was done by human agency. He was born that way. He was allowed to marry bas Yisrael. So if he marries her, machila b'tumah, she's allowed to eat truma on his behalf. Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Shimon, say further, androgynous koyin shenasa bas Yisrael. What happens if you have a koyin with an androgynous, which we've discussed before, is somebody who has both male and female genitals. If he marries a bas koyin, machila b'truma, then also he can have her eat truma. We don't say that he might be considered an akeva, and a woman doesn't marry a woman, and therefore she can't. We say that it's fine. Why? We'll talk about in the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a tumtum shenikra v'nimtza zachar lo yachloit. Rabbi Yehuda says that if you have a tumtum, which is the case where you have something covering the genitals, so you don't know whether it's a boy or a girl. We had that earlier in the parak, a membrane or something. Later on, it was ripped open, surgery was done, v'nimtza zachar, and it turns out to be a boy. Lo yachloit, nevertheless, he's not allowed to do chalitza, v'meshu kasris, because he's like a Swiss, he's never going to be fertile. Another din, androgynous noisei avaloi nisa, and androgynous, again, it was male and female genitals, can marry a woman. Avaloi nisa, he cannot be married by another man. We say, in other words, for that purpose, we consider him a man. Rabbi Eliezer goes further, or Elazar says on the side, androgynous, chayavanol, skila kezachar. Even more than that, if another man has relations with this androgynous, he would get skila just as if it was a normal male. The fact that he's partially male is considered enough. Why? We'll talk about in the Gemara.
So for that purpose, he's considered a man.
Right. So there's a perek that's appended in most Mishnayos to Masechta Bikurim at the end of Seder Zerayim. In most editions of Mishnayos, there's a perek appended to it, which actually comes from the Tosefta, which describes that there's certain ways in which an androgynous is considered like a man in halacha, certain ways in which it's considered like a woman, certain ways in which it's considered like both, and certain ways in which it's considered like neither. Our Mishnah is an example of the ways in which it's considered like a man. So the Gemara asks, Chitta, when we say that a Swiss chama who marries a bas Yisrael, she's allowed to eat truma on his behalf if he's a kohen, of course. The answer is, ma'ur detema merlid macho she'ena merlid ene macho. No, you might have thought to say, only somebody who's capable of fathering children is able for his wife to eat truma on his behalf. Why? Because the pasuk says, v'yulid beisoi. It seems to imply that there needs to be the capability of children being born in the house. She'ena merlid ene macho. You would think if he can't father children, then he can't make his wife eat truma. Kamash mo'al not v'chidosh. No, we don't say that in Russia.
Why we don't say
that? No, it doesn't say, but evidently, because v'yulid beisoi doesn't mean that. We use those words for a different drasha. Then we said Rabbi Yosi v'Rabbi Shimon Omer androgynous, that an androgynous who marries a bas Yisrael, she can also eat truma. Omer Rish Lakish machila b'truma vein machila b'chaz v'shoik. So Rish Lakish says the Mishnah means that he can have her eat truma, but if he's an androgynous, but if he's living in the time of the Bis Mikdash, she's not able to eat the chaz v'shoik, the portions of the shlamim that go to a kohen. She wouldn't be able to eat it on his behalf. Rabbi Yochanan says no. When we say he's allowed to marry her and he's and she's considered now the wife of a kohen, that means for all purposes, even for chazav
shoyk.
The breast and the thigh of a kohen shlamim are waved. The owner and the kohen together wave them, and then they're given to the kohen as his portion. When we say in hezel v'kohen every morning, we say shlamim kachim kalim shkatazim b'chol makom azara, etc. When it continues, hamuram mehem, what's lifted off of them, kayotze behem, has the same dinin, except that it can only be eaten by kohenim. That's hamuram mehem, the chazav shoyk that are taken off the shlamim and given to the kohen. So the same rules, except for the fact that it's only a kohen and his family can eat them. Other than that, the same rules apply. It can be eaten for 2 days and a night, and it can be eaten anywhere in your shlamim. So the question is, would Shlokish Maishna Chaz Vashok Dereisa? So according to the Shlokish, what's the logic to differentiate? Chaz Vashok is something Dereisa. Shrumanami Dereisa. Shrum also, for her to be able to eat, it has to be a Dereisa level marriage. So you're saying she can't eat Chaz Vashok because you're not sure whether the marriage is valid Dereisa, then why she's allowed to eat, why is she allowed to eat Shrumah? The answer is Chachab Maya Skinny, but Shrumah Bizman Azad, the Rabbanon. You're right, Rish Lakish is only talking about Shrumah that's nowadays, which is only the Rabbanon. After, not even necessarily after destruction per se, but what do you call it? It's not actually after the Churban, really. It's after the first Beis Hamikdash, after the Jews went into Galus, after the first Beis Hamikdash. We'll talk about it later on. Peveis and Vedeis. There'll be a little bit of discussion about it. After that, Truma is only did Rabbanan. I think you're right. I think it is after the Churban. Also, yeah. Okay.
You said previously.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay. Yeah, because the next thing, so what you're telling me then, that the Mishnah would be implying, according to the Shlokish, that in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, when Truma is Daraisa, that she wouldn't be allowed to eat from it? In that case, Ad-Tani Ein Ma'achil B'chaz V'Shoik, then why is Rish Lakish B'chalab bringing in the whole concept of B'chaz V'Shoik? Lifluk V'lisni B'didah, let him distinguish between Truma itself, when is our Mishnah talking about the Truma Dirabbanan, in Truma which is Dirabbanan, meaning either nowadays or Tosfos or Rashi points out, for example, Truma of other kinds of food.
What's Truma Dirabbanan?
Truma Dirabbanan would be everything now, but even when the Beis Hamikdash was standing, there was Truma that was only Dirabbanan. For example, Truma of food other than grain, grapes and olives, grain, wine and oil, dog and tears for yitzer,
is
Truma Dirabbanan, according to most
even
opinions.
After the Churban.
Even before the Churban. After the Churban, everything would be. Yeah. So why doesn't Rish Lakish make that distinction with that instead of dragging in Chaz V'Shoik? The answer is Hachinamikama. That's exactly what he means. Shahu Machila, Rish Lakish is saying, when is the Kohen, the Sandragonist, able to have his wife eat Truma? Only Machila, but Truma is Manazah Dirabbanan. He's only allowed to have her eat Truma nowadays, any kind of Truma, which is Dirabbanan. But when it comes to the time, Chaz V'Shoik, when the Beis Hamikdash is standing and Chaz V'Shoik existed, then she's not even allowed to eat Ba'afilu B'Truma D'Rabbanan. Then she's not even allowed to eat Truma D'Rabbanan, or Truma of apples or whatever. Duma Asi La'ichla B'Truma D'Araisa, because he might come to make her eat Truma of D'Araisa, and Rish Lakish holds that that's also. So Rish Lakish is not really distinguishing between Truma versus Chaz V'Shoik. He's distinguishing between when Chaz V'Shoik exists, meaning in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, versus when Chaz V'Shoik does not exist, meaning after the Churban. Before the Churban, when the Beis Hamikdash was standing, she couldn't eat any kind of Truma, according to Rish Lakish, because we're afraid even if she eats Truma D'Rabbanan, she may end up eating Truma D'Araisa. Nowadays, there's no Truma D'Araisa anyway, so therefore she can go ahead and eat any Truma D'Rabbanan. Okay, then we said Rav Yochanan Amaaf Ma'achil B'Chaz V'Shoik. Then we said Rav Yochanan holds that no, he's even allowed to eat Chaz V'Shoik, the Sandragonist's wife. Amalei Rav Yochanan Rish Lakish. So Rav Yochanan asked Rish Lakish on this. Mi savet Truma b'zman hazeh d'rabbanan? Do you indeed hold that Truma nowadays is only d'rabbanan? That you're saying
after the Churban.
Yeah, b'zman hazeh, meaning after the Churban. Yeah, you're telling me that after the Churban you're going to allow the Sandragonist's wife to eat any kind of Truma because it's only d'rabbanan? Do you really hold that way that all Truma nowadays is d'rabbanan? Amalei Ein. Rish Lakish says yes. Shani Shoyne Igul B'Igulim Oila. Because in fact, I learn in the Mishnah, which we're going to quote on Amud Beis, that if you have a cake of dried figs, of pressed dried figs, that got mixed in with other ones, Oila, then you're able to take it out. You don't consider. Now we know that there's. So one second. There's a concept like this. There's a concept, we've talked about it before, we've had Gemaras on it. If Truma falls into less than 100 parts of Chulin, less than 100 times as much Chulin, then all of it becomes Aser, it's called Meduma, only a Kohen is allowed to eat it. But if it falls into 100 times or more as much Chulin, then you're allowed to Ola, you take out one unit of it, even though you don't know it was the original Truma, you give that to the Kohen, just you're not cheating him out of it, and Yisrael is allowed to eat the rest. Now Rish Lakish is saying that even in a case which we're going to talk about soon, you can also have a case besides for Chulin and Truma, you can also have a case where the one that fell in is Truma that's Tomei, which you're not allowed to eat. It's an Isser B'Sivid Ishamayim, and the rest of it is Truma, which is Tahar. So that's the thing. So we're going to learn on Amud Beis that there's a Mishnah that discusses this issue, and Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan have different versions of what the Mishnah says. Rish Lakish's version was igul bi igulim oila, that if you have one cake of truma of dried figs of truma that which is tamei, which falls into 100 of truma which is tahar, we're saying oila, you can take out one and consider that to be the original tamei one, and the rest you're allowed to eat, even though it's highly likely that somewhere in that mixture is truma tamei, which would be offered to eat. Why would that be? Rish Lakish says obviously because truma nowadays is only dirabanan. So therefore, the whole concept of Truma Tmeya being also is also only Dirabanan. So therefore, the Cham could be Nekel on it.
And
Amalei, so Rabbi Yechon answers back to him, that's not how I learned the Mishnah. I learned the Mishnah that it's not talking about cakes of figs. Rather, it's talking about a piece of Chatas, piece of meat of chatas that fell into a bunch of that tamei that fell into a bunch of pieces of meat of that are tar. The difference is like this. The difference is that yes, it's a case d'oraisa. The difference is chatas obviously is d'oraisa. The difference is, I'm going to explain on Amud Beis, that it's a question of whether it's something that's always sold by number or sometimes.
What the piece of meat?
The point is, in other words, that Rabbi Yochanan is saying, you're telling me the only reason you hold to be Makel is because Truma is d'rabanan nowadays? No, Truma is d'oraisa, but the same way as we can be Makel on a piece of meat of chatas, the same way we can be Mako on a cake of figs of Truma, even if it's Daraisa. Because, he says, Mi Sabret Kol Shadauke Limanas Sheninu. You think that the Mishnah is saying anything that is often counted. No, Es Shadauke Limanas. The difference is like this. Kol shadaka limonis would mean anything where it's like this. Now most things are not sold by number. You buy most things in the store, you don't buy them by number. You usually buy them by weight. You have some things which are always sold by number, eggs, for example. Then you have things which sometimes are sold by number, sometimes not. But we're saying chaticha is slices, not necessarily. If you have, if they sell sliced meat in the store, you may well buy. But think of like the number of slices in a package of salami or something. So the difference is therefore that slices and also cakes of figs normally are sold. Sometimes you count them, but sometimes you just sell them by weight. So Rabbi Yochanan is arguing, anything which sometimes is sold by number, only something which is always sold by number cannot be bottled. These things are sometimes sold by weight, therefore they can. You're holding kol shadaka limonis, anything which sometimes is sold by weight. That's not what the Mishnah is saying. Maihi, what Mishnah are we talking about? We learned the Mishnah. If somebody has bundles of tiltan, it's an herb. In English, it's called fenugreek. They used to use it in those days as animal food. Nowadays, they use it as a spice in some kind of Middle Eastern cooking. Anyway, person has bundles of tiltan shokalaya kerem, so they grew in a vineyard, which you weren't allowed to do. You don't. You have to burn them. Shokalaya kerem, asabana. If the bundles got mixed up with other bundles, the bundles of tiltan which grew in Kalaya Kedem got mixed up with regular bundles of tiltan. Cool, and you don't. You have to burn all of them. They're not bottled. Dibrit a mayor, that's what a mayor says, because a mayor says bundles like that are sometimes sold by number. Sometimes you sell them by weight, but sometimes you sell them by number, a certain number of bundles. That's the point. In other words, a mayor is saying that since sometimes they're counted, therefore they can't be bottled. Whereas the Chachamim say that you can take them out with 1 in 200. With Orla and Kalaya Kerem, 100 is not enough like it is with Truma. With Orla and Kalaya Kerem, you need 200 times as much. Right. No, even Reb Meir would agree that the 200 applies to other kinds of things. If you have, for example, one carat of Kaliyah Kerem, let's say, that falls into 200 carats of that fall into 200 regular carats, even Reb Meir would agree that's fine, because carats are not usually sold by number. Only here he's saying these chafilei tzotzon are sometimes sold by number, therefore that's a problem. Whereas the Chacham are saying no. Because Reb Meir says anything which sometimes is usually counted, which sometimes is counted, is Makadish. It makes the rest of the mixture Kadosh, meaning off limits, meaning that it has to be burnt.
Means sometimes?
It means sometimes, right. Whereas the Chacham is saying there's only six cases where it's not bottled because there are things that are too important. Rabbi Kiva says it's not six but seven. Elohein, and the six or seven are as follows. Egoze Perech, nuts of Perech. Rashi says the Perech is the name of a place. Tosfos says that Perech means that they can be easily broken. The shells are very soft. So those are considered an important kind of thing. People normally sell those by number because of their importance, and therefore they're not bottled. Rimone Badon, and then pomegranate's a Badon. Again, Rashi holds it's the name of a place. The chavias stumis, sealed barrels of wine, those are considered important. The chilfei tradin, and the leaves of tradin. Tradin in modern Hebrew tradin means beets, but it seems that in the times of the Gemara, teret meant a different kind of vegetable, maybe like turnips or something. Anyway, the leaves of them are considered a very important thing. The kochei kruv and stems, or rather heads of cabbage. Or blas yavonis and Greek squash, which is some kind of large squash or pumpkin or whatever, it was considered a very important vegetable. Rabbi Kiva adds here the seventh one, loaves of bread that are baked by a balabais, by a private person, as opposed to ones that are baked by a baker, which are smaller than everybody agrees that those are not that those can be bottled. So whatever it is, that's the Mishnah. And the Mishnah finishes off, of these six or seven things, whichever ones are suitable to be also as Orla, then we say, then we're talking about Orla. For example, Rimonim are not, the thing is like this. Orla only applies to trees. Kaliyah Kerem only applies to vegetables or grain. So therefore, there's a disconnect over here. In this list of six or seven things, there's no one item which can be both Orla and Kaliyah Kerem. It's one or the other. So whichever ones are suitable for Orla, then we're talking about Orla. For example, the pomegranates and the barrels of wine. If you made them Orla grapes,
pomegranate comes from three.
Yeah, of course you say hey, Tanim. Kaliyah Kerem, whichever ones on this list, like the squash and the beet roots and whatever, so those are suitable for Kaliyah Kerem. Then Kaliyah Kerem. And so that thus far the Mishnah. Now Rabbi Yochanan Sava es shadakli manas sheninu. Now Rabbi Yochanan holds that Reb Meir's rule is es shadat limonis. Only something which is always counted cannot be bottled. But Rish Lakish have a kol shadat limonis sheninu. And Rish Lakish holds that anything which sometimes is counted. So that's the source of their machlokas. Therefore, Rish Lakish would hold that these cakes of pressed figs are considered an important item since sometimes they're sold by number. That really, they should not be bottled. Why do we allow them to be bottled? As we're going to say in a minute, because truma nowadays is only the rabbanim. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan holds no. Es shadakli monik, only if they're always counted. Igulim are sometimes sold by number, sometimes by weight. So therefore, they could be bottled anyway. So therefore, even truma could be deraisa and they could still be bottled.
What's the halacha like Rabbi Yochanan?
Generally, when there's machlokas for Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, generally the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. So yes, in this case, I think so. Yeah. In this case, the halacha is like Rish Lakish, the truma b'zman hazeh d'rabbanan. So yeah, this is one of those cases. My chaticha, what's the case of a slice of meat? The Tanya, we learn in a brisa. Chaticha shochatas tmeish nizav, or mei chaticha shochatas tahiris. If you have a slice of a chatas which became tomei, which therefore you're not allowed to eat, and it got mixed up with 100 slices of chatas which are tahir. Similarly, a slice of lachem aponim which became tomei, and again, you're not allowed to eat it, that became mixed up with 100 slices of lachem aponim which are tahor. Kala, you're allowed to take it out. You're allowed to, it becomes bottle. You're allowed now to take one out of the mixture and consider it to be the tomei one, and the rest of the kohenim are allowed to eat. Rabbi Yehuda, Amalai Tala, Rabbi Yehuda says, you cannot bring it out, because Rabbi Yehuda holds min b'min, olein bottle. It's the same min, therefore it can't be bottle. But if a slice of chatas, which is tahor, which therefore kohenim are allowed to eat, gets mixed up with 100 slices of cholin, which are tahor, and therefore, so in principle, a kohen could eat the whole thing, or similarly, a slice of tahor that got mixed up with 100 slices of regular cholin bread, then everybody agrees that you don't take it out, because in that case, why should you take one out, and the chances are that a Yisrael is going to be eating the truma, or the chatas, or the lechem aponim, better sell the whole thing to a kohen, let him eat it. That way, for sure, a kohen is eating the piece, which is lechem aponim. And, okay, it's hefsed muat. You're losing a little bit of money because chatas meat sells cheaper than regular meat because you have so many rules with it, so you have to eat it within that day, etc. Similarly, lechem aponim, okay, you're hefsed muat, but at least you're not losing the whole thing as you would if it was tameh, where you would say the whole thing has to be burnt. So katanim yesterday shatala. Nu, the point is, the beginning of the Braisa mentions that if you have one slice of chatas, which is tame, and gets mixed up with 100 slices that are tahor, we say tala, you can take it out. And chatas is daraisa. That's a kasha and rishlokish. Rishlokish is saying, one, do you say that you can be mavakalit when anything, some things that sometimes are done by number, only if it's dirabanan? Here we see a case with daraisa, chatas is daraisa, and you still see you can be mavakalit. You're right. You have to be talking according to the shlokish. The case would be where after the piece fell in, it became dissolved. And somebody was cooking up a stew over there. A piece of chatas, which is tameh, fell in, and now the whole thing got dissolved into one big mush over there, and you can't tell what's what. Question is, how can I time it to Rabbi Yehuda? Well, then why does Rabbi Yehuda say it's not bottle? The answer is Rabbi Yehuda will time bottle, because Rabbi Yehuda goes according to his shitta. He holds that an item can never be bottle in its own species. We learned in Psachim, for example, that therefore we hold blood can't be bottle in blood. We had this a few times already. So therefore it doesn't matter they all got dissolved. It's still meat, so therefore it can't be bottle. Question is, so what are you telling me then, that if it didn't get dissolved, then you're saying the braisa would be implying, according to Rish Lakish, that you cannot take it out, that you have to consider the whole thing to be tameh, and you have to cure the whole thing?
Loini means what?
Loini didn't dissolve. According to Rish Lakish, we're saying, in anything daraisa, when you have something which sometimes is counted, sometimes is sold by number, it can't be bottle. Slices of meat sometimes are sold by number. Chatas is daraisa. According to Rish Lakish, we seem to be saying that if the meat didn't dissolve, if you actually have 101 slices of meat there in the pot, then you can't seem about it. You have to throw the whole thing away, burn the whole thing, whatever. So then, Adatani then why is the Mishnah bringing in a new case where the meat that fell in was tahor and the meat that fell into was tahor? According to Rish Lakish, the Braisa should be making a distinction within that very case itself, instead of bringing in a new case. But when is it talking about that we will allow the slice of chatas to be bottled when it dissolved? But if it didn't dissolve, then you shouldn't take it out. According to Rabbi Yochanan, we understand. According to Rabbi Yochanan, slices of meat are not always sold by number, therefore it can be bottled even if it didn't dissolve. According to Rish Lakish, that it shouldn't be bottled unless it dissolved. So why is the Mishnah mentioning tomato versus tahara? Let it mention tomato where it dissolved versus tomato when it didn't dissolve. Answer is tahara is a different. The Braisa would rather mention the case where both of them are tahara. Why? Rashi says, because...
Dissolved and not dissolved.
No, rather than mentioning the case of dissolved and not dissolved, the Braisa would rather discuss the case, the second case, where the meat that fell in is tahor, because you would think maybe it should be more shayach to be bottled, and therefore we're saying that not. Tosfos explains differently that even though in the case of tahor v'tahor it's only also tzarim, you would think maybe it should be more lenient, maybe you should say it is bottle. No, nevertheless you say it's not bottle, as opposed to truma tmeya, which would be also to everybody. Yeah. And we'll continue tomorrow with analyzing the